Hi everyone, I want to thank you for joining us today for our Proctor podcast, all the way from our Proctor pod up here at head office in lovely Perthshire. My name's Kira Proctor and I'm the Managing Director here at the Proctor Group. Today we're going to be talking around what the future of modular offsite is, and I have two colleagues here who I'm going to ask to introduce themselves very shortly, Will Jones and Adam Salt. So thank you both for coming up to head office today to have this chat.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kira.
So I'm Adam Salt. I'm the Business Development Manager at the Proctor Group that looks after the modular and offsite businesses, mainly focusing on the UK and Ireland, but also now venturing around to looking at the European markets and American markets as well. So I see myself as a bit of a strategic partner to a lot of these companies, understanding their challenges and seeing if we can offer solutions that potentially can help overcome those challenges, really.
I'm Will Jones. I head up the business development. I'm Will Jones. I'm the business development manager for. Do it right, Will. How much editing did
third
you want to do?
Lucky. Third time lucky.
I've already done this once today.
You got this.
I'm Will. Thanks, Kira. I'm Will Jones. I head up the business development team here at the Proctor Group, and I used to do Adam's job. So hopefully, I should have picked up a little bit of information on modular on the way. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm interested in that because obviously me and you have been heavily involved in the modular industry for the last couple of years. Kira, not so much. So I'm more interested to see from an outside point of view how you think the modular industry is doing, the future of it, and get your opinions. Just to see if it's fair.
On his head. Yeah.
Thank you, Adam. I thought I was just going to be having a break here. Well, I suppose modular, it's not a new concept. Is the first thing. But I do think we've seen a lot in terms of technological improvements, economical demands, and the changing of mindsets, really, that's kind of attracted a new wave of investment and interest in the whole concept. So, I mean, I think the productivities that we can see from modular in the industry is really interesting. But personally, I'm much more interested in the kind of innovative ways that these buildings can be delivered and the speed at what they can be delivered at. So I think we've seen a lot of change. There was an awful lot of talk around modular about 5 years ago, and now we're starting to see actually some of the changes being implemented and the delivery of these projects at scale. By some, not all, which I think goes a long way to help our housing crisis here in the UK. And it's a really interesting moving landscape with, you know, continual new ideas going into that sector.
I think that's interesting because we see a lot of media in the UK and it can put quite a negative perception on modular, I find. So you're right there. There's a lot of positivity. There's a lot of investment coming into the sector. There's a lot of innovation. Every modular factory I've been to is different, has different processes. Some full robotic, others very hands-on with staff manufacturing the modules. And it's very interesting to see that kind of a viewpoint.
There's a lot of success as well, and I think that's not spoken about enough. There's some pretty big companies out there that are manufacturing, supplying, and building some pretty impressive buildings out of, if we stick with volumetric modular for now. I think that's kind of not swept under the carpet, but it's not such an exciting story as, you know, this hasn't worked or that's not working or you know, we'll just stick with traditional. You know, I think it's quite interesting from my point of view, you've seen over the last 5 years the sector grow probably longer than that actually, quite dramatically. But the focus on modular has also changed. As you said, Kira, this isn't new. Volumetric modular offsite panelized systems have been around for many, many years. The focus is definitely different. It's become almost some of these super factories that have been manufactured and built over the last decade have really come to the forefront, and there's a lot of pressure on these guys to deliver a product and get it right.
Yeah.
And when that doesn't happen, you know, that's really when the negativity starts to come and that gets sort of spun out a bit out of control, I think.
Definitely. But I certainly see the benefits of modular. I think with the weather we have in the UK in particular, having an off-site built house makes a lot more sense to me. And with the numbers that we're trying to hit for the housing shortage, I do see it as the answer. And I think we'll see a lot more companies set up, a lot more investment coming to that sector. And I think it's good to see it develop to what we've seen in the last couple of years. But I think the next years coming is going to be even more investment in there.
I also think the perception of modular in the UK has evolved over the past number of years. So even, you know, myself going back historically, there was very much a perception that they all looked the same, they all performed the same, especially when it comes to the volumetric side. But I think now there's a much more varied offering of materials that can be used, both during, you know, the actual performance in terms of the makeup of these modules and the aesthetics of what they can look like afterwards.
Yeah.
So whilst they may be similar, there's definitely more material choices, which I think is important to the end user, or, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, who may eventually end up in the domestic one, certainly.
Yeah, I've never really understood that sort of theory or belief that they all look the same, because don't a lot of our houses, you get on a housing estate today in the UK that's newly built, and whether it's been built traditionally or modular, they all look the same, right? I mean, you've really only got sort of maybe four or five different house types that are kind of rinse and repeated over again. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Of course, it has to be done for cost more than anything. But that's normal, right? The house doesn't make a home. That's really corny. You can cut that out.
I like it.
No, I do agree with that. I think, and I think also there is that bit misconception that modular can't adapt. You speak to a lot of these companies, they can have a number of different types, but they also do design for clients as well. It is a bit more difficult when you've got a set up factory and a set up line. You tend to kind of stick to that. But there is options to adapt in modular.
And we do tend to build in blocks, right? We do have squares and rectangles, boxes. Yes. That's how we build. That's how we've always built. So if we can do it more efficiently and more cost effectively, and I think that's probably the most important thing, which we'll probably talk about in a bit more detail, then why not?
Well, it leads us on to a nice point when we talk about energy efficiency and where we're going with the building regs and the standards in terms of, if you want to get better performances, keeping the design simple and almost box-like means it's going to be easier to achieve those performances. Mm. When you start putting in loads of curvatures into your building, you come at risk of potential points of failure. So modular makes it simpler to achieve better performances. And if we're wrapping whole modules as in part of a house, you've got a more continuous airtight line rather than having, you know, different sections. Wrapped with air tightness lines,
and that's quite an interesting concept as well. We always think that, because you simplify things in your head, don't you? It's a module, it's going to be delivered to site as a box, and you're going to have your window, your door on the outside, potentially your finish if that's been done in the factory as well, maybe a brick slip or a render or a timber clad. But actually there's no reason why we couldn't change that and say, well, why don't we build a certain part of the building as a module, and then if we want something to look different, so we want more curvatures on the external facade, that can be done post. But all your, I guess I'm talking about the external fabric, but all your existing building, which you need to get right for all the reasons you mentioned, you know, thermal performance, air tightness, etc. Yeah, and that can still be done, and then your external facade is kind of there just to make it look nice, right? So. Yeah. That's probably something that's not, and that might be the reason, it might be because it's an expensive way of doing it, but that's not really been looked at yet. But again, the difference between a modular factory that's trying to churn out 100 modules a week and a modular factory that's a little bit more bespoke, you know, probably has more of an opportunity to sort of look at that type of thing.
Yeah, and I think it's important to clarify here that modular companies build differently and finish differently as well. So some modules will be up to the membrane, the sheathing board, your SFS or timber frame, maybe your internal fit out done. Others will have the insulation on the outside and also the cladding and look like almost the complete house when it leaves the factory and is connected with other modules. So yeah, they do finish at different stages, but there still might be some on-site work. Again, potential there for making the facade be a bit more unique on-site, but it can happen also in the factory as well, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What do you think about the car factory analogy that always seems to get buddied up with house volumetric modular houses.
It's a good point. I mean, it's a good concept in terms of it's something that's worked very well for many years, been refined. I've seen Toyota and a lot of their methodologies now been adapted across the world to how to work in factories. However, when I look at building a house, I do see it as a little bit different because it is a home at the end of the day. There is a lot of performance criteria that is, I suppose, it is critical in making cars as well, but I do find it just a little bit different. So I think understanding to how to build a house before you start with your factory and your factory line is probably the most important part, and it's probably going to solve a lot of problems once you get later on down to actually finishing your house. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I think it's not a little bit different. I think it's a lot different. I think you can't really compare the two. And that's, in my opinion, a bit of a mistake that a lot of people do. You know, they'll say, well, we can build a factory that can churn out hundreds and thousands of cars. Why can't we do that with modules?
I think once it's set up and you've got your design, you've got your working house build, then yes, maybe some of the operation features within the factory and can be comparable to how you operate within an automotive industry. But I do like to keep it a little bit separate in terms of we're trying to build a house here or a home for an end user, and work backwards from that point of view.
The scale's also massively different, right, as well. You know, a car's a bit smaller, a bit more plastic, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas your house is obviously, it's a lot bigger.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a lot more difficult to replicate, and because people want them to look, you know, differently or behave in a different way depending on the actual fundamental performance of the house itself. Yeah. I think it's although it's easy to say, well, yeah, but there's different cars, they look different, they have different performance criteria. I think it's a lot more tricky to get that right and build something that you're going to live in, and function as a house. And sort of repeat that. I think that's quite difficult. And maybe, again, this is probably just me talking about something I don't know enough about, but maybe some of these factories, the way I've seen some of them been designed, it's been right. We want to kind of almost churn out this amount of modules, and this is how we're going to do it. It should be easy, right? We're just going to create a factory, and it's going to build these modules for us. And the thought hasn't really gone into, well, actually, what do we want? What's the end game here? What's the actual final piece of the puzzle? And how can we make the factory work for that? It's almost like the factory's, it's what the factory can do to build a house, not what do we need the factory to do to be able to build that module the most cost-effective way possible.
Yeah, and I suppose when the car comes to the end of the line in automotive industry, that's a finished car. When the module comes to the end of the line in a modular construction, it's not the end of the house. It still needs to be shipped to site, installed onto the groundwork system, and potentially a bit more additional work done on site as well, so that's still part of the construction phase. And the way that all interacts, and then the problems that can occur in that storage, transportation and install on site, is where we're starting to see a lot of the remediation costs come in and a lot of the problems into modular. So that I suppose that leads us nicely then on to the problems that we commonly occur with a lot of these systems. Did you want to start?
Did I want to start? Problems.
Challenges that we've had to help deal with some of the companies.
I think one of the keys that is for me, and you mentioned this earlier, transporting the modules, but also the storage of the modules.
Yes.
You know, a factory's built and we build a module within a factory and then it's not ready to go to site yet. So where do we put it? It tends to be in the yard or maybe the car park, and it's left there for a period of time. And was it designed to do that? Was it designed to be left exposed for that period of time? Mm-hmm. And that's where I think initially, when I first sort of started talking to big volumetric modular companies, there was sort of niggly issues there.
Yeah.
How do we protect that module from becoming damaged, moisture ingress? UV degradation has been a bit of a problem.
Condensation.
Yeah, that's a real big one.
Mold in the storage, and I think that's interesting to where our approach is now, because for a lot of projects you will do the hygrothermal assessment for the completed build, but now with modular we're looking at doing the hygrothermal assessments for the partial build, where it's going to be at storage stage, because if it's stored for 3, 6, 9 months, we need to understand what's going to happen to that module in that state during that storage phase. So it's important to analyze that area as well, which we've started doing with a lot of companies.
Yeah, we've seen, because of that, we've seen different kind of outcomes on hygrothermal assessments and condensation risk analysis. As an example, we get quite a bit of solar gain on what we presume to be solar gain on exposed modules where we have a very, very potentially cold temperature, and then a nice clear day is upon us and the sun comes up and heats up that module really quickly.
Yeah.
And if you've got any sort of wet trades that have been completed within that module recently, there's quite a high water content and it's got to go somewhere, but you've wrapped that module in something. It might be a plastic membrane.
Yeah.
It might be a vapor permeable membrane, but the amount of moisture loading that you get that's all of a sudden being heated up can create that condensation risk.
That's quite a good point there. We see a lot of modular companies in the shrink wrap, normally in white colour and potentially with their logos on it. Obviously, that's normally an impermeable system. So if that is got, if that module does have moisture in trying to dry out, that will cause condensation in areas. And we've seen that on a number of modular reports during the storage phase causing condensation. So being able to remove that plastic wrapping, have a vapor permeable system that can protect the modules from weathering and also drying out, such as the Raptite, it is critical to the design, really, I think.
Yeah, it's great for transportation. And in practice, it probably looks really good as well, because you tend to have your company logo across the side of the module, and you can see it when you're dragging it down the motorway. Mm. But if it's ever left for a period of time, there is a risk there, especially with the particular tricky climatic conditions through the winter in the UK.
And then the challenges we also have with the transportation. Sometimes the shrink wrap gets damaged, not as much, but more so when that shrink wrap comes off, we find a lot of damage to the module. The membranes that are maybe been taped on have started to rip off, and all those insulation might have been exposed to elements. So that's another big area of issue we see, is in that transportation stage, especially when you're going 60 mile an hour down a motorway. The elements are a little bit different to deal with. So we find the best solution is a fully self-adhesive membrane to resolve with that.
I think that's where it can be so confusing, because all the time and investment goes into this modular sector, and then after the module's complete, we still see a lot of evidence of companies not adequately protecting the finished product, if you like, the building, the modular building, which is quite disappointing. And often it can be looked at as, the square meter price of that material. So shrink wrap versus something more flimsy than something self-adhered like Raptite. And we actually had a project. It was a Turkish company that we were working with, and the modules were manufactured in Morocco. And so what they did was they used the self-adhered membrane that we manufacture. I'm not doing a sales plug here. This is just a general comparison. And they then used a mechanically fastened weather barrier, also vapor permeable. But so they shipped these modules from Morocco to the southeast coast. And we saw them at the docks. And essentially, as you rightly pointed out, Adam, there was water ingress. The non-self-adhered product had been completely blown away in the wind on this container. And there was water ingress to the module. It didn't look good. It all had to be remediated. Whereas the investment in the self-adhered vapor permeable membrane, which can then be used for that ongoing functionality, was absolutely perfectly intact. So I think what we have to do is, and certainly that industry still seems to be doing, is get away from looking at the square meter cost of a material, but look more at the value to the overall finished product that's going to be available if they make different decisions.
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, a membrane you don't see when your building's finished. So it doesn't get as much kind of...
Attention.
Attention, yeah.
Yeah.
Good way of putting it, in the design. Whereas maybe your outer cladding or your finish of your building, because that's how it's going to look, might take up a lot of the budget and be more of a focus. But these areas are where problems are going to occur in your design. So getting the right materials, a fabric first approach, if you like, is going to help massively to solving a lot of these problems.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. Absolutely. And so, I mean, what about the elephant in the room here? People based in the UK will probably know or have heard of some of the major modular companies, which unfortunately have not been a success. What would you guys put that down to? I mean, what's going on there?
I think with everything, if we take Modular still as a new venture, although it's been established for a long time, but if you take it as a new venture, you're going to fail a lot in new ventures. And it's important that the industry now look at those failures and learn from them and grow from them. I think just having the right structure, understanding the process of the line and how that's going to replicate into finishing a house is quite critical. Obviously, it's sad to lose some big names recently, but I think it should drive the industry closer together now to make it work and hopefully learn from those areas, in my opinion.
There's going to be a lot of people as well, very talented people that do know what they're doing, that have learned from the mistakes here. And I think that's trying to put a positive spin on that are still in the industry and can take that forward. Some of the people we've spoken to openly about this as well, that are sort of trying to either set up their modular company or are working for a successful modular company. And also, probably while we're on that, what is a successful modular company? I'm talking here of, you know, people that are, you know, working on a weekly basis and making money and manufacturing modules and selling them and have a client base and are consistently doing a good job. So we've got the challenges that are set out by the housing shortage, and I think there's a lot of pressure on modular that should be the answer. This is going to sort this out. We get this right and we can replicate, you know, hundreds of thousands of houses out of a factory. And I think that's sometimes where it's going wrong. Do we need more modular companies? And probably the answer to that is yes.
Yeah.
But more focus on getting it right.
Yeah. We need people to support the industry as well. Warranty providers, insurance companies, building control need to understand it more. And I think there's a lot of benefits to building control as well. If you've got to go to a 500 home housing site and inspect every home, that's going to be very difficult. You can come back on certain days. You're not going to see everything be manufactured or built on site. Sorry, you can only probably visit a number of plots. When you go to a modular factory, you can watch every process to every house in one location. So there's a lot of benefits there. So I think a lot of people need to get behind the industry and support it. And then there's the media side of it as well. I saw an article in The Guardian that said, return of the prefab. Now, I'm glad you laughed there, Gil, because the title doesn't really excite me. I don't know how that feels for yourselves. But
it's, prefab's not exactly got a great kind of feeling. Towards it.
No, I mean, prefab has a very post-war kind of perception of the market.
Yeah.
And prefab essentially is just anything that's done off-site, and it doesn't genuinely become associated with quality.
Yeah.
And I think I remember there's a big tower collapse in the US, it must be 30 or 40 years ago. So it's, again, not a new concept, but that really gave a very bad reputation to prefabrication. That was global. I mean, it went around the world and people were very nervous of it. So I think there's this kind of negative connotation with prefabrication being cheap, not using quality materials, and actually it's just a word, and modular is very different.
So yeah, if you were driving around looking to buy a house and that was the slogan to try and draw you in, it probably wouldn't. But if it was something like precision built off-site house system to control tolerances in a controlled environment, actually, I might go have a look at that. I might be interested. So the language we use around the industry is very important, and I think everyone's got to come together and support it, and that's the only way it's going to take that next step, leap forward, in my opinion.
When you see some of these finished projects, though, right, I mean, it's hard to tell the difference between a modular house and a traditional built house, you know, because essentially, as we mentioned earlier, you know, the actual aesthetics of the building, you still have the options to make it look like you want it to look, whether that be your cladding, your render, your brick, your block, your stone, you still got the flexibility to be able to do that with a modular build. The idea behind it is to try and long pause.
Give people the option for materials.
I was going to go with the idea behind it is, you know, to be able to replicate a high performance building.
I think
cost.
We'll.
I was going to go.
No,
with cost,
I think what what you were trying to say there, Will, is really the concept of repeatable quality.
Exactly that.
So because these modules, they're, you know, they are manufactured in a factory, a lot of the quality checks are carried out the factory. Mm. And Adam pointed out earlier, that does have some challenges because there's still work to be done when it goes to site. But in terms of the amount of the reduction of work and labour that's done off-site, it really does allow these checks to be carried out in a factory setting, and therefore it really does improve the first time quality on that building, in my opinion.
Yeah, we talked a lot about challenges with modular. Let's not forget there's a lot of challenges and problems in traditional built homes. You know, there's a number of issues on a number of housing sites with traditional built, so it's quite common to have problems in build.
We see some very big traditional house builders that we know are no longer with us, you know, or have changed guises. So it's, yeah, you're right, it's a good point to bring up. It just seems to be, if it happens to a modular company, it's a massive kind of negative connotation on the entire industry.
It's big news.
Yeah,
it's
newer.
I think the other thing we should probably cover, have a chat about today, is the whole concept of sustainability. So, I mean, there are studies that show how much less energy is required to produce a modular building than it is a traditional building. Now, of course, we work with the whole industry, so we wouldn't say which is better in particular. But in terms of the sustainability of the product, there's a lot of technologies being built into these modular homes in the factory, and waste reduction, of course, on site because of the planning and the process that goes into how these are manufactured in the factory. There's surely a lot of benefits we can discuss there.
Yeah, and I think I've seen that firsthand when I've been to a lot of building sites and they look like a building site. There's a load of mess everywhere. And I go to factories all the time and it's really well organised. It's neat. There's not as much wastage. It's controlled. It's a lot easier for people to collect wastage because it's from one location rather than a number of different sites. So there's definitely a lot of advantages from recycling and waste. And then there's the benefits of the precision built homes being better performances when tested on site, once they're delivered and finished. And that's got to be a big thing, a big driver going forward for sustainability and energy performance.
I had a conversation a while back now where they were talking about potentially the idea of a pop-up modular factory. Because one of the big issues has been transportation. And if you've got somebody who wins a modular project and they're based up in the Northeast, and the project is based down in the southwest, that's quite difficult. Transporting these huge modules on our, you know, small network of roads that we have, it's not easy. Yeah. And that's where, as we said earlier, that's where there's quite a lot of high risk of things going wrong, whether it be damage or just the fact of time really getting it to site. And I quite like the idea of that. I wasn't too sure how this would work, but it's quite interesting to sort of explore, you know, if there was a modular manufacturing site in every county in the UK, and that could be responsible for, you know, a lot of the local authority work. Would that not be one way of potentially making this more of a success?
There's a lot of facilities across the country that may work in other sectors and other industries that could be empty throughout periods of the year or certain times because they're not busy, and they could utilize their facilities for that project and their staff as well. Upskilling, training, and all that can happen a lot easier, I think in modular. You know, you can teach them the process that they're going to work on. So there's a lot of advantages there, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think as well, what we see in terms of the growth of modular, as you say, from a locational point of view, Will, if you take the timber frame industry, they tend to have one or two locations generally, or a partner. So they might have one in Scotland, one in England, and they don't really have the need for the expansion because they're transporting, you know, panels, open or closed panels to site. But the modular, I mean, companies we know and work with have expanded, and each time we talk to them, they're often talking about their next factory, their next location. And I think that is about locality, to support local authority, to support things like transport. And so there's not only the demand for growth, but of course it's not just about the size of their premises, they're looking at geographically different regions, and they're popping up all over the place. But I mean, I think one of the good things about modular is really the acceleration of project timelines it can offer, and really that can have such a profound effect on the economy, not just in the UK but globally, because if, you know, we have this housing shortage all over the world essentially, and if that can be achieved with you know, faster builds, and it's proven that, you know, that there are faster build programs. That's one of the huge benefits it offers.
And that's invaluable to a lot of other projects, not just housing that we've spoken a lot about today. Think about a school that has a set time frame during the summer holidays and needs to get a project finished. Traditional built is going to make that very difficult. Having modules already made, just delivered and installed on site in that small time frame is more achievable, more possible, which is why we've seen a lot of education led projects, MOD, Ministry of Defence led projects, take up the route of modular and support it as well, which is a good thing for the industry.
We get a lot of things right as well. I think we're very hard on ourselves as a nation. You know, we say when we do things wrong, we're the first to say, "Oh, look, that didn't work," or "We failed here." But we get a lot of things right, especially in modular, and I think that shouldn't be overlooked. I know you've spoken to a few industries from abroad who would look at our modular industry and say, "How are you doing that? How's it working?"
Totally agree there. I listen to a lot of podcasts, obviously construction related and modular related, and the ones from Europe and America almost see the UK as pioneers in modular. And if you said that to anyone in the industry in the UK, you'd be like, "Well, no, I've seen this advert."
They wouldn't believe you, would they?
They wouldn't believe you at all. No. You know, we're doing some phenomenal things with high rise. I mean, the modules stacking up for high rise in London, now Birmingham as well. It's phenomenal. We're looking at module lift shafts as well for high rise, which is, I think, going to be a huge development, all coming out of the UK. But yeah, listening to what's happening in Europe and America, a lot of people are looking at what we're doing and always seeing us a bit as pioneers in the industry. So we should be proud of that.
Yeah, something to be excited about, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree. And I mean, we talk a lot about the challenge of labour in the UK, and this does solve another problem. So, you know, we do have a labour shortage in the UK. And even just the concept of the labour saving versus the factory to offsite, you know, it's not a lot of people stop to think about even just the delay of waiting for another subcontractor to come on site. So the next trade, if you like. Mm. So all that's taken away and done in the factory. And generally, in our experience, it tends to be pretty meticulously planned after it leaves the factory in terms of what has to be done next, certainly for high rise, etc. So it doesn't experience the same levels of delays often as a non-offsite.
Yeah, I've seen that firsthand. You couldn't be outside today rendering the outside of a house,
right?
But you could quite happily be in a factory somewhere, you know, in the dry
weather. Absolutely,
exactly. You know, you're not weather permitting whether you can actually crack on with a lot of the build,
even installing membranes. You know, something that we know very well. Obviously, you've got tapes, you've got sealants, you've got fully self-adhesive membranes. Sticking them on in conditions like today would hinder you and slow your project down. Obviously, that's where the advantages of modular come in the controlled off-site environment.
Yeah, 24/7, 365 days of the year.
Yep, definitely.
So I think we've covered a lot today. Thank you both very much. I just want to end by asking for your opinion. You know, where do we think modular is going? What's next?
I think modular is the answer, especially to the housing shortage at the moment. And I think it's got a bright future. It just needs the industry and people outside the industry to understand it more and support it. So education is going to become key. Things like these podcasts hopefully will help that. And just learn it, understand it a bit more. It's my recommendation, really.
Yeah, modular is not going anywhere. It's here to stay. And I think it has a very, very bright future as well. For all the things Adam said, but just as long as we are... The focus on modular is it can't continue to be negative, you know. Understand what it is, what it means, and how it marries up with traditional building, because they can go hand in hand.
Yeah, let's sing the praises and you know, the good achievements. Let's see more of that on social media, out in mainstream media as well. The successes we're having, rather than just all the negative press.
Well put, Adam. Well put. So thank you both for coming up to head office for today's podcast from the pod. Proctor podcast from the pod, I should say, and thank you very much to all our listeners. We do have more episodes coming on different topics with some of the same colleagues that joined us today and some different colleagues, so please keep your ears pinned for our next episode, and we look forward to you joining us again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kira. Thanks, everyone.